And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quimry. Thank you for listening. Toyo stoves from the Japanese brand Toyotomi are a popular heating system across Alaska, especially in rural areas. They burn efficiently on stove oil, heat cabins and houses in places where temperatures regularly drop way below zero. But stove technicians say Toyo's mid-sized stoves are failing in cold weather, and there's no consensus about why it's happening. KTOO's Anna Canny reports.
David Quinsenberry swears by his Toyo stove. He's used it to heat his home in Juneau for nearly a decade, and he says that it rarely malfunctions. But that changed during a cold snap in December.
We had single-digit temperatures, and my stove went out. I had my niece was staying here, and she called and said there's a code on it. The code shows that it's not getting any fuel.
Luckily, he had a backup heater to keep the house from freezing up. But the stove was nearly brand new. A Toyo Laser 531-532. He'd installed it in August to replace his old stove, a larger Toyo model that had run for 8 winters. When the newer one stopped working, Quinsenberry called local stove technician Steve Sanders to take a look.
And he knew exactly what the problem was. He opened the stove up, and the fuel nozzle was all carboned up with black crud. And he showed me photographs of other stoves, and mine looked exactly like that.
Sanders owns S&S Toyo Repair. It's the only Toyo repair shop in Juneau. He says he serviced around 20 stoves back in December, and they all had the same issue, a black ring of carbon buildup that was snuffing out the burner flame.
It was quite a few of them that did it around the exact same time, and it was during that cold snap.
All of those stoves were in Toyo's mid-size range, and most of them were less than a year old. The majority were Toyo 531-532s, along with a handful of OM23s. That's the predecessor to the 530 series. The two models use most of the same technology. Sanders says he's seen similar carbon buildup before when people use additives in their fuel.
But not new heaters and not this many at one time. No, I never seen it.
The stove is able to run again when the carbon buildup is scrubbed away. And all of the Juneau stoves were covered by warranty. But Sanders says he's still scratching his head about the root cause of the outage.
I know how to fix it, but exactly what caused it, I'm still not sure.
He believes it could have been a problem with a bad batch of fuel, but he's waiting on answers from Rural Energy Enterprises in Anchorage. They're the state's sole distributor of Toyo stoves. Rural Energy told KTOO that any potential fuel studies would be conducted privately. With warmer weather recently, the stoves Sanders cleaned up have been running just fine, but technicians in colder parts of the state have had the same problem.
They will shut down, brand new ones right out of the box, and we've been dealing with this for a good 2 years now.
James Altum, a technician from Arctic Technical Services in Fairbanks, says he believes the problem is not the fuel, but the way that this model of Toyo stove processes fuel. Altum says that most of the Laser 530 units they've installed malfunction.
And it really happens when it gets cold. And my boss and I have investigated it, and we think it has something to do with cold fuel and cold air.
The problem is, they don't know for sure. Altum says that local technicians don't have a deep knowledge about the Toyo stove's manufacturing or programming, which makes it difficult to find a long-term solution. He says Rural Energy hasn't had any answers for him either. Like Sanders, he's been told the problem is related to fuel supplies, but he's skeptical. He says he serviced Toyo stoves across Fairbanks and Barrow that use fuel from several different companies. The one thing they have in common is the kind of unit.
It is strictly the 530 series unit that is having the issue.
Rural Energy told KTOO that they don't believe there is a widespread issue with any of the Toyo stoves they distribute. But without an explanation for the malfunction, Altum and Arctic Technical Services have few options to respond to unhappy customers. He says they've tried to steer new customers away from the 530 series altogether.
People that come in to buy them, I really try to talk them out of it, because until they fix this problem, I don't like to sell product that I can't stand behind.
Toyo stove owners will have to wait for the next cold snap to see if their stoves hold up. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
The Tanner crab fishery begins this weekend in southeast Alaska. Crabbers are facing low prices, and bitter crab disease is expected to reduce the sellable catch. KHNS's Alan de Premenil reports.
The Tanner crab fishery will start on Sunday. Typically, 60 to 80 boats participate throughout Southeast. This year, the prices are expected to be low compared to recent years. An Anchorage Daily News article lists the end of pandemic stimulus money as a possible factor in reducing consumer demand. But there is also a geopolitical component to this story, according to a local tender in Haines. Brent Crow sums up his understanding of the situation.
The biggest thing that's happened right now is that the collapse of the snow crab fishery in the Bering Sea has disrupted the supply chain. Markets that are used to having crab available are looking elsewhere, and the Japanese markets have started sourcing crab from Russia through China to circumvent the embargoes on Russian seafood.
The embargo was put in place after Russia invaded Ukraine. Crow says because Russian seafood processors have difficulty finding buyers, they are cutting their prices. The availability of that cheap Russian seafood has impacted the Tanu crab market.
Last year, the price was $8 ex vessel, and right now it's looking to settle somewhere in the $3 range. The initial offerings were $2.50.
The price drop led to a two-week strike in Kodiak. Crow says there is no indication a similar action will take place in Southeast.
Southeast fishermen generally don't organize like that. They either just participate or don't, you know, based on whether or not they see it as profitable. And Central Gulf fishermen seem to be more organized in that kind of a way.
Some crabbers could see their income further reduced by bitter crab disease. The disease causes the flesh to taste like aspirin. There are some visual cues to the condition, and processors don't buy those crabs. The portion of affected crab varies with location. The Lynn Canal can register as high as 80%. That means crabbers get money for only one in every five crab they catch. The sick crabs are cooked to kill the disease and brought to the landfill to avoid its spread. Crabs have been known to catch the disease after feeding on dead infected crabs. The disease is caused by a single-celled plankton that uses the crab as part of his reproductive cycle. Adam Mesmer is a shellfish biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
It gets into the crab's blood and starts replicating within the crab, and it slows the crab down. And we've seen that in the fish tickets, too. The first couple landings that fishermen will have fairly low amounts of bitter crab. And then as the season progresses, the percent of bitter crab goes up. And the thought is that those crab are slower, since they're sick, to crawl into the pot.
Mesmer has studied some sick crabs in his lab. The single-cell organisms that cause bitter crab are called dinoflagellate. Mesmer says they use the crab as a host before releasing their spores.
We've seen them sporulate in the lab, and the crab will kind of sit up on its legs and start shaking, and this red cloud comes out of its mouth, almost out of a science fiction movie. And those are the spores of the young dinoflagellates that are sent out into the water column. And at least the one in the lab, as soon as it was done doing that, it died instantly.
Bitter crab is not harmful to humans. The only effect is a bad taste in the mouth. Mesmer says scientists have not been able to determine what causes bitter crab numbers to rise and fall.
I think it's just something that we're going to have to live with in this area. For a long time, it stayed really stable.
On Sunday at noon, the Department of Fish and Game will announce the duration of the opener. Crabbers can expect a minimum of 5 days in the most productive and best studied areas, with another 5 days to fish the less desirable ones. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePremenil.
At a Senate committee hearing yesterday on the Chinese spy balloon, Senator Lisa Murkowski lashed out at the Biden administration.
As an Alaskan, I am so angry. I want to use other words, but I'm not going to.
Murkowski asked representatives from the Defense Department why the administration waited so long to respond to the threat, and why not when the surveillance balloon first entered U.S. waters north of the Aleutian Islands on January 28th.
It's like this administration doesn't think that Alaska is any part of the rest of the country here. To get to the United States, you've got to come through Alaska.
Melissa Dalton, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, told the Senate panel there were a number of reasons why the balloon wasn't shot down over Alaskan waters. She said it would have been a much more dangerous recovery operation than the one conducted off the coast of South Carolina 8 days later.
The water depths offshore, the Aleutians, at 6+ nautical miles go very quickly from about 150 feet to over 18,000 feet.
The Defense Department officials said they would reveal more information about the handling of the spy balloon